If you happen to be in church with us this past Sunday, you'll know that I started my sermon off in a rather unorthodox way. I told a story about a Christmas tree that contained an 8-foot python. And one of my friends who was here visiting for the day, she was terrified by that story. She hates snakes. She said, "Ron, you're not supposed to start a sermon that way." Her son, by the way, was totally amused because he thought I had just gone out of my way to get his mom. She said, "Ron, you're supposed to start with a joke. So I'll make up for a Sunday, and I'll start with a joke of sorts." This is a real list of tweets of husbands and wives trying to hold it together during the holidays. It may apply to some of you, I don't know. But my wife said that we shouldn't get each other Christmas gifts, but just to be safe, I'm buying her one of everything. My new Christmas pillow has jingle bells. I feel so festive throwing it at my husband's head. Husbands on Christmas watching everyone open the presents they bought them. Let's get married and have kids. So instead of enjoying a glass of wine and a movie, you can watch Peppa's Christmas for the 86th time, and I can go outside and figure out why the giant inflatable Santa isn't blowing up. I recorded a bunch of Hallmark movies to the DVR and didn't realize they were erasing my husband's shows in the process. He was livid. So the moral of the story, get yourself a man who loves Hallmark Christmas movies. My wife and I are 3 weeks in on researching and discussing air fryers and if it's worth losing the counter space. Middle-aged Christmases are wild. My husband has a lot of suggestions for putting up the Christmas tree for someone that has never put up the Christmas tree. And this, I think, my favorite. All I want for Christmas is to sleep for 9 hours straight, wake up to the sound of coffee brewing, and then ask questions like, "What did we get the kids for Christmas? And how late were you up wrapping gifts last night?" Basically, I want to be my husband. So husbands, go home and help your wives tonight. That's the moral of that story. It's a pretty good list. It's actually, there are more on that list, but we don't have time. Lots of lists this time of year, aren't there? Lists that things that you've had to get done and probably things you still didn't get done and things that you might as well give up on getting done by now, right? Just give it up. It's okay. Christmas is coming, whether or not we're totally ready. And that's okay. And to all of your lists, I'm going to add another list. I'm sorry in advance. But not really, because I think the list I want to give for you tonight maybe is a list of some things that ought to bump some other things off our list and maybe focus us in on what Christmas is really about. And so I want us to think about three things tonight. Sing out, hold tight, and multiply joy. Sing out, hold tight, and multiply joy. It's kind of fitting. We've been hearing a lot about singing over this season, and we've been talking a lot about joy. And last week we looked at Mary's Magnificat. If you were here in church with us, we looked at that first Christmas love song, if you will. And tonight I want to tell us about another song. We picture in that Lucan version of the Christmas story a whole sky full of angels singing, don't we? First, there's one angel that comes with the great good news about what God is doing, about a child that's being born. And then suddenly there is a multitude of angels singing. It says saying, but I think they're singing glory to God in the highest. We can't hear it any other way, especially not after your anthem tonight. That anthem about angels we have heard on high, that's where this comes from, right? This vision of God breaking forth in song in the heavens, the good news about Jesus who's coming. And the shepherds who are so moved by it that they move from being terrified to being compelled to go on to Bethlehem to find this child wrapped in swaddling clothes, this child who will change and save the world. It's fitting in this season when we have been focusing on joy with some unlikely guides like Marie Kondo and Mary, like Isaiah and John Pavlovich, like even John the Baptist as a guide to our joy. We've been talking about joy all the season, and so it's fitting on Christmas Eve that we mark the 300th anniversary of that great hymn of our faith, one that we'll sing tonight, Joy to the World, written in 1719. Isaac Watts was a disgruntled young man. He went to his father and he said, "All the church music, it's so boring." His dad was a preacher. And some of your kids have never said things like that to you, I'm sure, when you brought them to church. But anyway, he said, "The music is boring." His dad said, "Well, do something about it." And so he did. Isaac Watts became one of the great hymn writers of the church. You leaf through your hymnal, you'll see Isaac Watts all throughout. He wrote over 600 hymns. And so he took the words of Psalm 98 and he paraphrased them. He got in a lot of trouble for that. You weren't allowed to paraphrase the Bible back in the 1700s. But you hear the echoes of this song. This is Joy to the World. Oh, sing to the Lord a new song. He has done marvelous things. Make a joyful noise to the Lord, all the earth. Let the sea roar and all that fills it, the world and all those who live in it. Let the floods clap their hands. Let the hills sing for joy. All creation is singing for joy. Let heaven and nature sing. That's where this comes from, Psalm 98. It was not a Christmas song. In fact, it was not even sung to the same tune that we are used to singing to it now. That would take another 100 years or so. When Lowell Mason, who was a church musician up in Boston, found the words to this text that had been penned by Watts and a musical setting, he had riffed off of Handel and he had put them together, this tune called Antioch and these words, Joy to the World, and they now form this song, Joy to the World, the Lord has come, let earth receive her king, let every heart prepare him room. Heaven and nature sing, and heaven and nature sing, and heaven and nature sing. But it still wasn't a Christmas song. It was just in a book of Psalms. It took another century, the turn of the 1900s, 1911, when a popular singer sang it with a church choir and put it out on a record of Christmas music. And it suddenly became a Christmas carol. We can't hear it any other way, can we? Joy to the world, the Lord is come. It is our song at Christmas. It so encapsulates the Lucan text. It so encapsulates what God is doing in Jesus. We are bursting forth with the angels, just wanting to sing. And so on this night, of all nights, I encourage you to sing out, just like you have been singing out. Not necessarily sing well. You don't have to sing well, but you do have to sing out. You do have to sing out in a kind of peanuts sort of way, right? With your mouths all the way open and your head tilted back in praise to God. This is the night that we sing out. Christmas is the night when we hold tight. There's that great line in Luke's text about Mary kind of caught in this moment where suddenly there are visitors showing up to see her and these shepherds, and who are these strangers coming to see my baby? And what kind of baby is this? It's been promised to be a special baby, but Mary, young teenager that she is, giving birth in not the best conditions, has got to be a bit concerned. And I picture Mary, as it says, she ponders all these things in her heart. Doing what Carissa's been doing lately. You just hold your baby tight, right? You just hold your baby tight when you're not quite sure. And you feel that love and you feel that breath on your neck. And I picture Mary on that night holding baby Jesus tight. Soaking it all in. This is a night to hold tight. To hold tight to one another. To hold tight to your families. To hold tight to the God who holds us all tight. In God's embrace. Last Thursday, our schedule got rearranged a little bit. Holly's mom broke a leg after having hip surgery about a month ago. And so Holly was sent up to Philadelphia to kind of help her mom out, get her from the hospital, and then help find a rehab place. I'm happy to report her mom's on the mend, and we're going to see her tomorrow on Christmas Day, and she's making progress. But last week was kind of complicated in our household. Holly was gone for about 4.5 days, and it was the week before Christmas for me. And so that also meant I had Charlie duty on Thursday, our granddaughter, which I wasn't quite counting on. I had a sermon to write for Sunday and a sermon to write for tonight and all these things on my list that I needed to get done. But I was happy to do it. I love my time with Charlie. And I thought, well, at least Charlie normally takes a morning nap. I'll bring my stuff. I can get a little something done. Well, Charlie just wanted to be held that day. And so we rocked, and we rocked, And it was the most important thing I could have been doing in that moment, way more important than anything else that I thought I had to do on my list. I just held tight. She wanted to be held tight, and I held her tight. What a gift that is when we get to embrace the people that we love. This is a night to do that, to hold tight. Debbie Thomas is a mom. She also works in a church. She's a Christian educator. And her son had a terrible bicycle accident as a 15-year-old. He had some pretty significant injuries, including head injuries. And weeks after, he was still having headaches. And then months after, he was still having headaches. And she was praying all of her faithful prayers and praying for his healing and praying for his strength and praying for his recovery and holding on to hope through it all. And now 2 years later, he's still not well. He still has those headaches. And she says that she has not stopped hoping or holding on to God, but the shape of her hope has changed. This is what she writes in an essay. These days, I hope not because things are even close to being okay, but because the God of the small and the mundane and the inexplicable is my son's companion in his pain. I hope because God is my son's companion in his pain. Hope is my tether, my footing, my solace. It's a bridge wider and sturdier than I imagined it would be that connects me still to the God who loves my son, who loves my son. Hope helps us to hold tight. Hold tight. That's the word I shared with a widow from our congregation as I visited her last week, remembering that her husband had died a year ago on Christmas Day. And we talked about his life, and we talked about his memories, and we talked about hope, holding tight. Hold tight. That's kind of what we prayed together last Saturday night. That you hold on to each other, you hold on to Paul, you hold on to your love, and you hold on to your faith. Hold tight. Hold tight is the message I shared with a young woman in our church who is battling anorexia and in a clinic right now. That's where she's spending Christmas. When I visited with her, when we prayed together, the message I shared with her was about Christmas hope and holding tight and the God who holds us tight always. Hold tight. This is a night to hold tight to God and to hold tight to one another. And finally, this is the night to multiply joy. Do you see the ever-widening circles in the Christmas story? It starts off small with just a couple, with Mary getting a message from an angel, Gabriel, and then sharing that news with Joseph, and then them wrestling with what that might mean, and them going to Bethlehem to have this child. And then suddenly there are angels, and there are shepherds, and then eventually there'll be wise men, and the circle gets bigger, and the joy gets multiplied throughout that whole story. We're familiar with that. We've been multiplying joy all season long here in this church. I've gotten to hang out with our preschoolers, sharing story time and watching them play bells and sit on Santa's lap. It's been so joyful. Singing for their parents and grandparents with all those cell phones out. I've watched all of you bring in literally hundreds of bags full of food for the hungry right here in our community to help it span. And you, as a congregation, have replenished the entire food bank here in Severna Park. And I don't say that lightly. You have hundreds of bags of food because of your generosity. You've been multiplying joy out there in the community. Our kids have been bringing us joy. This was at the Christmas pageant rehearsal last Sunday after church, and then we got to see it live at the 5 o'clock service today. Such joy that the kids bring us. And then yesterday, one of the moms and a few of the moms and a couple of the dads made their way right over here to the Heartlands. And they were making crafts and singing songs and sharing hot chocolate and coffee with seniors right here as a way to spark joy during this season. Multiplying joy. Some of you have been multiplying joy because you took one of the $100 bills we were giving out at the beginning of Advent. And you've been telling me the stories. I have the best seat in the house. I get to hear all the stories first. And then I get to post them, and you could read them. You can go on our website and read these stories. But all of these stories seem more and more to have a common thread. It's not just about somebody giving somebody else $100. It normally is somebody giving somebody hope or love or joy or healing or connection or life. And that $100 often turns into $200. Or sometimes it turns into $600. And in one case, it turned into $1,000 when somebody took the $100, added $900 of their own, and gave it to an employee who had just lost their son to an opioid overdose, and leaving behind an expectant wife. And so he was able to give her this gift of $1,000, and it didn't feel awkward because he could pawn it off on the church and say, oh, this is just what the church is doing. And it was okay. This is how we pay it forward, he said. He was multiplying joy. I got an email last night about somebody from our community who heard about this project, and they're going up to their church that they grew up in Pennsylvania, a small church, maybe 15 families, maybe 30 in worship. They're going to go there for Christmas, but he sent a check for $2,500 to the pastor anonymously. And he said, why don't you and your congregation spark some joy in your community? I got a story in just this week from a young man in our congregation whose sister had just come out of rehab, 10 months clean. It's been 10 years since she lived in her own apartment. She's moved into her apartment. And so he and his wife helped her to furnish her kitchen, which she didn't have anything for. And they took that $100 and it grew to several hundred dollars, and they furnished the kitchen. But that wasn't the most important part of the story, the part of him telling how this was rebuilding their relationship, how this was helping her to forgive her, how this was helping them to reconnect again. One of the people who sent me a story told me that in helping a friend with a disabled son buy computer parts for a Christmas gift for his son, the disabled boy, that money kind of just faithfully multiplied. It faithfully multiplied, which was his way of saying he gave a little more. It faithfully multiplied. And one woman who was sure she was going to take that $100 and give it to a street performer in New Orleans because she was headed down to New Orleans. That was going to be the way she was going to do it. Her plans got derailed at the airport when she was in the restroom. And there was this woman singing Christmas carols and with little reindeer antlers, and so joyful that she took the $100 envelope right there and gave it to her. And they cried together in that airport bathroom. Other people have cried for other reasons at airport bathrooms. And then she went down to New Orleans, and she kept finding reasons to share. There was a street performer, and there was a security guard, and there was a waitress. And she said, I had to come back to Severna Park because I was running out of joy. You've been multiplying joy all over the community. Shane Perry, one of our young dads, told me this. As he participated for another year, he says, for me, I think the $100 is so much more than just giving the one time. It forces me every year to see all the small moments in our lives that we can impact people with a simple act of God's love. It's not just an Advent project, friends. It's a way of life, multiplying joy for others. So friends, here's my list for you. On this night, I hope with all the other things you have to do, and some of the things you're going to let go of, because I've just given you permission to let go of them, that you will sing out, that you will hold tight, and that you will multiply joy, because God is the original joy sparker. And we, when we taste that, we overflow. We have no choice but to share and multiply the joy to the world. The Lord has come. Repeat the sounding joy.